Thanks for tuning in to Jin and Tantra. In this episode, we discuss the idea of people, books, life experiences, and yourself as teachers. The windows of transition in our lives, epiphanous moments, reframing religious monogamy, and having an awareness of the trajectory of your life. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to Jin and Tantra, spirituality with a twist. The podcast that takes Tantrism, Buddhism, Taoism, Sufism, Kabbalism, Shamanism, Chinese medicinism, and all of the other isms we've been influenced by, and blends them into a tall, crisp, cool cocktail. Your spirit has been longing for.
I want you to get together.
Now, isn't that refreshing?
I want you to get together.
Hey, fellow G&Ters, those of us who like our spirituality with a twist. So Daniel and I are back. We're in the midst of kind of wrapping up this series of episodes that were inspired by Carl Jung's Answer to Job. And as we like to do in our little podcast, we kind of took that book, explored parts of it, but also used it as kind of like a stepping stone to talk about other things that seemed interesting. Jung had a lot of his own experiences with his Christian upbringing and, you know, how ultimately that played out for him. And I guess his own sort of transformations of himself as a Christian person into whatever he became afterwards. And so we thought an interesting thing to do would be kind of share our own stories, right? It was something that like had hit us, and I was sort of like, okay, I'll go first in this thing, right? And then I am interested in Daniel's story, you know? My story is like a little bit more of a breakup story.
Mm-hmm.
A little sad breakup story. We can shed some tears about how Jesus and I broke up, but then we got back together again in a way.
Right.
So I found Gnostic Jesus. I actually don't know what Daniel's story is. So if Daniel wants to share it, ultimately at some point in his own episode, I'm curious to hear his experience. But anyways, we're kind of talking about mine first, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I just like to say about it that it's a lot of it's like case studies. You know, when I think about what we're trying to do here at times, we had different guests on. Like Daniel just recently had a guest on where the episode will be coming up soon. And yeah, we try to get people to,
It's out. Yeah. Dr. Rory Hiltbrand. And that's out. That was the one that was previously published. So you can.
Okay. Yeah. Daniel and I were both on meditation retreats over the sort of the Christmas, New Year's holiday. So I'm like just getting back on the world. So, okay, cool. So, mm-hmm. and you know, we try to get people to like talk about themselves, their own experiences to share with people so we can all learn from each other. And then sometimes we're the case studies. So in this example, I guess we're the case studies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Though I did talk with Ryan Davenport, one of our anthropological experts, right?
Mm.
Of the show. I want to have Mary Kay on again too. We were talking about people to have on. So.
And people should have a group of experts at their disposal to ask random questions. So some people have like mechanics and, you know, chefs and artists. We have anthropologists, a multitude of them, you know.
I reach out all the time and go, hey, Ryan, what about this?
Yeah. No legal counsel at all. No medical counsel.
Worthless.
No electrical engineering, no plumbing guys, nothing like that, you know. But if you need an anthropologist.
Well, what you need in your life is those people overrated. The anthropologist is what you need. Now, Ryan's always there. And of course, Mary Kay, Ryan is wonderful too, you know? So we have our anthropological like tag team. And, you know, maybe he'll want to come on and share his own thoughts about this. But anyways, we're the case studies. And it's interesting because, you know, we're both clinicians. And I think we think that way. We think about things through a case study filter. My brother's kind of funny about it. I can't remember if we talked about it on the podcast before, but he's definitely like, don't turn me into one of your fucking case studies. Don't go. And I'm like, too late. I'm already doing it with you.
You're way too late for that guy.
But it's also like, don't go talking about me as if I'm one of your case studies. And I'm like, okay, I won't, I promise. But it's how we look at things, you know?
Yeah,
so, and we look at ourselves that way too. And then hopefully in the sharing of the case study, other people get a chance to like learn their own things from it.
I think also In another way, it's being an active student of life, even if you're not a clinician. Because I mean, I talk about this with my patients. I know that's coming from a perspective of a clinician, but I really am trying to impress upon people the importance of taking your life as your teacher, you know?
Yeah.
And that, like, it's so imperative of you to learn what to learn things as you go through them. And you don't, sometimes you're going through it, it's hard to pull lessons out as you're doing it, but when it's over, and people generally know when something is over, or at least there's a logical stopping point, that you have to reflect upon that in order to glean things from it so that you could learn, at least for yourself, if not for other people, you know, when you're sharing. And sometimes you're sharing just by living, you're sharing just by being in the presence of other people and having your life experiences come forth. So outside of being a clinician, just being a human being and learning from our own experience is something that, like, I think is really important, you know. And you know, we try not to, like, be preachy in that way, but that's one of the things that I say so often in the clinic. I feel like I might as well just say it here too.
Well, I love the idea of, like, the guru is, like, four different things. I think that's one of the most helpful ways I've heard of talking about that, as opposed to always just making it a person, right?
Yeah.
And we've had this in different episodes, but, you know, it's the people who are your teachers, but it's also, you know, the books that you read, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, you know, your life experiences is one of them, right? And then lastly, your own kind of spirit, or your own Shen, or your own Buddha nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
I found that to be the most helpful way to talk about that, Daniel, and that fits right into that to my mind, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I try to remember that idea, you know, but I think it's a powerful way to frame that thing. Who are your teachers? Well, your life experience will be one of your major teachers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as important as the people, right? Of course, those are important too. Yeah. I mean, on that note, this is life experience we're trying to share.
Yeah.
And it's interesting as you're talking about, you know, looking at how what happens in your life and looking at, like, maybe periods of transition. And that's, like, that actually does segue perfectly into this. So I guess we'll segue, right?
You could say maybe I've done this before.
Well, literally this episode we recorded before. We've tried to record it for the first time when Daniel was on retreat. And then there were technical difficulties.
There were technical difficulties.
And I had to laugh about it. You know, we were talking about before we started recording, and I'm like, one of the things you have to, like, for people who know and love Daniel, like me, and other people know him, he'll never do two things the same way twice. There's just no fucking way. He's never going to do it. He refuses. And even if we did, like, 10 minutes, I was like, that was great, but let's do that again. Daniel just immediately, you get 45 seconds in, he's like, he's purposely going to run it off in some other direction because he likes the spontaneity.
Yeah.
You know, he likes to feel the spontaneity. And so I was like, okay, I know what Daniel's going to say about this one. We recorded it once. He's probably going to say totally different things.
Probably.
So there was no point in me even thinking, okay, Daniel said this last time. Maybe I'll say this about it. Nah.
Nah.
I'm going to go some other place with it that I can never predict, which is the beauty of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So me is the case study. Like, what's my, should it be my breakup story with Jesus? Only temporarily. We found each other again. In a new form.
Your separation.
Jesus comes in so many forms. You can just find
a new. There's not enough.
We had an episode about it, right? All the different ways people see Jesus. So, but anyways, I wanted to bring up some of the points that I thought were important,
mm-hmm.
kind of like what you're talking about. And I kind of looked through it and I went, well, okay, there's a couple of major things I'd like to just suggest people to think about. And one of them was this idea of these kind of windows of transition.
Mm.
Where you find yourself in some period of your life where you're genuinely changing. And I was definitely in, you know, my own thing where I was reevaluating my whole Christian upbringing and things like that. And really kind of breaking up with it. Breaking up is hard to do, but we had to do it. It was like during my undergrad days, and it was this very specific window of transition kind of idea. So I just wanted to throw that out to people. It's interesting to look at your life and see when are those kind of critical moments when... Yeah. You really change, you know? And sometimes those changes are coming from within and sometimes they're coming from without. For me, in this time, it was a little bit of both, and I'll try to explain it at least as we go through. But I wanted to throw that idea out to just be aware of that. I think those are really important, you know?
Yeah. This is something that has been coming up actually quite a bit for me in the in clinical practice and with friends as well. And I have been using, because it came up when I was taking this class on, like, five element theory.
Mm.
about the transition between, and you know, we've talked about this a little bit last time with Dr. Rory, and then obviously you and I have talked about this, but the transition between the metal element and the water element. And you know, we could say that like the natural cycle of thing, that's kind of like the metal element in this case is representing like the sort of physical body, the corporeal body, and the water element is like the seed. So it's the end of a cycle and the beginning of a new one. And they'll say that's a logical transition, you know, from when something is finished. Like if you want to take a meta example, you can look at fall and the natural kind of world around us that plants are, you know, sort of dying off. They're yielding the last fruits and vegetables for the summer, for the, you know, fall root vegetables. And then after that, the things are dying, they're retreating back inside only to come back out in the springtime. And much like this, we have some kind of similar, I guess, aspects of our own life in growth and letting go and so on and so forth. But that transition between one period to the next, especially when you're letting something go and then you're moving back in and then budding new seed or new leaves and turning into a, you know, coming from a seed, turning into a new plant, is a crossroads, actually. And it's a really important point because you're letting go not only of things that are no longer serving you, but then you're drawing energy back in so that can be deeply put into the ground and then growing into something brand new or growing into something of a newer version of what you were before. And for plants, that's a cyclical process. But for us human beings who have a psyche and a consciousness, we often don't do it with awareness. It's just something that kind of happens. And so, as you're pointing out, when people can kind of look back and reflect on their life and say, what was important to me at that point and what changed, I think it gives you practice to do that then moving forward when you have a new opportunity to change, right? Even if you're just doing it during the seasons, like a spring cleaning or something like that, you can also take that opportunity and make changes when you change relationships, when you change jobs, when you move, when you have a life, some kind of a life change, a health scare, whatever the case is. If you could enter it into it consciously, then the outcome will be, I think, exponentially different because you're not allowing it to just happen to you, but you're bringing with it things that you want to manifest on the other side. I don't always use that word, but I'll use it here because I think it's apropos. Eric, you're muted, so you have to unmute yourself.
I had to clear my throat, as they used to say, right? So I beat that up. But I do like a lot of lecture on Mondays and Tuesdays, record on the Tuesday. So anyways, there's a feeling to it. Like, you know, there's maybe something about recognizing like, oh, this is one of those little periods where things could go potentially a lot of different directions. And just to recognize, oh, I'm in one of those windows. It's kind of a big deal. And it gets into what you're talking about, the energetic feeling of the five phases or something too. Like they have a quality to them. I guess there's a chess metaphor here too. My son plays a lot of chess, you know, and the great chess player Garry Kasparov said there's a moment in the chess game where you realize, oh, this is the moment. So he and I, when my son talk about his games and stuff, I say, well, where's the Kasparov moment in this game? You know, we realize, oh, this is where things could possibly go in all kinds of different directions. This is the moment, right? And I almost feel like I know in the spiritual things like Taoism and Tantra and Zen and these things, they want you to sort of recognize that feeling almost, you know, like get it as a feeling. You know it intellectually, but you can also like there's an intuitive feeling sense to it too. And maybe this is one of the times when I was like maybe first starting to recognize that fully or something. I don't know. We're reflecting back on it. But so I wanted to bring that thing up. The other thing that was happening was I was during my undergrad days. The thing that was happening was I was getting my head shrunk with my psych mentor, Dr. Michael Schnur, who is such a wonderful person to me, and he's come up in different episodes along the way. And that was sort of a big deal too. And like thinking back, I was thinking, you know, it's to go through that process, there's a lot of feelings of like disorientation, potential confusion, because, and it makes sense because essentially, well, on the one hand, a lot of times you're reliving very painful events, and that's disorienting. I can remember leaving sessions with Michael and like going to catch the, you know, the subway in Chicago outside of his office and just feeling like I feel like just completely, I'm almost like depersonalized or just like my consciousness is so changed. I can't even I can't even find my normal self as I'm sitting here waiting for the train to come. It was like that strong because sometimes you're talking about the most painful things you've ever been through.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I think they also call that like a vulnerability hangover.
I haven't heard that phrase, but I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, you're just like you're exposing, I don't know if exposing is the right word, but you're admitting or confessing actions, and not just actions, but the psychology behind the actions. So you're really very bare, you know, but that's good though, because that's what you want. I think that's what you want to do. If you're still hiding, even in that moment, then it's going to be very difficult to unpack the reasons for which you chose things, or, you know, whatever you're working on at that time. And I think afterwards you feel a little bit like you're, you know, like you're showing somebody the best you can, the inner workings of yourself, and they're responding to that.
Yeah, it's a really strange place to be in. And I mean, in a weird way, I think sometimes in these episodes, we try to do this, right? We try to go to these spaces where it's like, okay, here's a vulnerable spot. Let's go there.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And there's something healthy about that for
all
of us to see that in one another. It certainly makes you realize other people are coming from those same kind of places of vulnerability, right?
Yeah.
The other part about it, though, that really hit me was that hopefully what's happening is you're deeply questioning yourself and probably deconstructing yourself. You know, and that's disorienting, you know, in a way, you know, if you think about it through like our Carl Rogers filter or something, you're like deconstructing your self-concept as you're going through that process. And, you know, what the new self-concept is going to be, like, it sometimes isn't obviously clear. You could revert back to old things, or you could explode into new things, right?
Yeah.
So you're in this kind of crazy place where you're really pulling down your old ideas of who you are, and probably in a very real way, the actual old thing that you were. You're probably taking it apart, and it's pretty disorienting. So I was definitely feeling a lot of that kind of stuff. It occurred to me that this isn't always talked about in this way, though. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't think people talk about like how disorienting and confusing that is.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to bring it up for other people who are going through psychological stuff, because there are a number of people who are going through, and they're seeing psychologists and going through these things, and you can feel pretty disoriented.
The same,
taking apart the old ideas of who you are.
It's very similar when you are on psychedelics, actually. And that's why it's really important to do them with people who know how to hold space, you know, who are very sensitive to those kinds of things. But even without that, even for people who aren't into that, if you do a good, or you have a deep experience during a meditation retreat, you can also do that, because you are sort of deconstructing some of yourself as well. And you and I have talked about this a couple times, when people return back from these either events or retreats or whatnot, it takes some time to reassimilate back with your partner, back into your sort of normal life, because you're vulnerable in a different way. Your energy has definitely shifted. And so, you know, just to kind of, I don't know, keep it in mind when, if you're doing sort of self-work, that it's not just as you make progress, but you do have to kind of reintegrate yourself back into your life, because you are changing. You're changing who you are a little bit.
Yeah, we were talking about, just, you know, with our own individual retreats we went on, we were talking about a little bit of that before we started recording. And one of the things I was saying was like, I don't know if I can talk about this yet, because I'm still sort of processing this. And you and I know each other very well. We talk about a lot of these things that we experience, but it's kind of more unusual. But I was like, nah, it's going to take me a little bit.
Yeah.
To really think about what this means for me. And obviously you were very cool about that. You understood, right?
Of course. Yeah.
I also, on the psychedelics thing, it was around this time, we did an episode way back in the beginning where we kind of went through some of our psychedelic experiences. I talked about my little acid experience. And that was around this time too. And I couldn't remember if this was pre or post this particular part of my life, but it was somewhere in that same window of time. Part of what you're talking about earlier was that I was also in a transition around my relationship status. I had been with the same person for 7 years. I had talked about our relationship and some of what to me were some of the really important episodes we did, at least for me personally, and I hopefully resonate with people too, where I really talked about our relationship kind of opening up in a different way that I wouldn't have expected, and my realizing, okay, I can be okay with a different way of thinking about how love and relationship looks. And I learned a lot from her through that.
Yeah.
But we were sort of at this particular window of time, but we were probably both going through our own trips, right? We're all on our own trips, as Ram Dass might say. And, we were opening and closing and breaking up and all kinds of stuff like that was happening. So, you know, that's obviously a major transition point, right? To be with somebody for a long period of time like that. In Chinese medicine, sometimes we talk about this with the wood phase, talking about the Chinese medical ideas, right? And the idea of like planning and decision-making having to do with the wood energies of the spring, right? The movement of where things are going to go. And sometimes they talk about the wind there too, with those wood phase energies. And so it's very windy too. You don't know where the winds are going to blow, right? And sometimes there's a lot of these winds kind of blowing around. So anyways, this was the space. And I wanted to just bring it up because it's transition times, right? And maybe it's like recognizing that thing. And then the other thing I wanted to have about it too, related to that idea, was these sort of epiphanous moments. Because for me, it was very interesting. Like my particular transition with, you know, Christianity happened pretty suddenly in a strange way. So I just want to bring up those very strong, unique moments. And I know you and I both have feelings about that, you know, Daniel, yeah. But you know, that moment when bang, something really happens, and maybe yeah. recognizing that. And I think a lot of times you get those moments and then they flip past you.
For sure.
You know, you don't really fully get the meaning of it, but in this case it stuck, you know, like something happened that obviously like had a place where it was going to go. But I do think that's something to be aware of, like those whole windows of time, but also those individual unique moments where bang, something happens kind of out of the blue. And so this hit me like pretty strongly. I had like carried, I wasn't like an anti-Christian or Catholic person. We've talked about that too in different episodes. I had good experiences in the church too. We had one priest who was a little bit dangerous to the boys. I'm not going to lie about that either.
Ooh.
There was one priest who I remember at one point, sorry to my brother, but this happened to him. But he tried to get him to go out to some cabin in the woods to do some special spiritual training. And my brother was like, no, no, thank you. And, you know, so I wasn't, it was, there were moments where some of the bad parts did show themselves, but I had like good experiences too. And I think maybe it's the same for you. I didn't have a bad feeling about Christianity in any, you know, deep way. I had good mixed feelings, but I had good feelings too, you know? And I had things that I felt like I had learned. But in this particular one instance, I was living in this area of Chicago called Little Italy. Mm. I was in undergrad, and I was going through this time of all this sort of tumultuous change. And I was walking, it's so specific. You know, it hit me as I was prepping this episode. I was walking out of my little back bedroom in this apartment we had in Little Italy, and I can remember the distinct moment, which is strange because a lot of times you don't remember that specifically. You'd have more sort of a general feeling, right? But it was very specific. I was walking through, and I had like a dresser and a little doorway, and then something just hit me where I was like, I don't think I believe in this Christianity thing anymore. And it happened in the way that it wasn't about even doubts about God or Jesus or something. It was more, and this goes into the things we were talking about in the episodes last year a little bit. It was more like, I don't think this whole way of thinking about love and relationships is right. Or at least it isn't right for me. I can't judge it for other people, but I realized like, no, this isn't right. This isn't right for me. At least I personally don't believe in this.
So you kind of had this idea that Christianity and the way that it is taught was more of like a monogamous relationship, and your reframing of relationships thereby reframed your relationship with their view of religion.
That seemed to happen, you know, like, and I saw that as like, well, that's interesting. I don't feel like that's right for me. And sometimes when you're saying it's not right for you, you mean it's not right. But I mean, at least I can say it's not right for me. And I was like, okay, this isn't right for me. I don't believe in this personally. And like all of a sudden it all started to like just, I'm making like little motions with my fingers here to try to show this. But it was like, it just all started to like crumble apart out of this, which is, you know, I wanted to share the story because it's a strange way for something to fall apart.
Right.
You know, I got interested in history of the New Testament and biblical scholarship at some point pre-pandemic. And there's a whole like subculture of people who have broken up with organized religion, Christianity.
Right.
And then they become really atheist. And it's usually about other stuff. You know, it's not about this, you know?
Mm.
So it was kind of an interesting, like, doesn't seem like it's a typical story, you know? Usually it's more like, I believe more in science, and so I don't believe in these things anymore. Like, that's a typical story, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people go very sort of sciencey, but that wasn't the issue for me. It wasn't like I even became an atheist exactly or something. I was just like, no, I just don't think this is right. And again, it like, if I look back on it, it's funny because I don't even remember what I was thinking about beforehand. It just was like, bang, I just had this thought, you know, like something in like more like a lifestyle thing. more than anything else, like what you were saying, Daniel. It was more like, okay, I just don't believe in this way of living, this way of being in the world. It's not right for me somehow. And I guess I'll have to search for something different. And that seemed to be what happened. And I suppose I had my own like various kind of personal reasons around this. I definitely had looked at like the lives of the people around me growing up and been like, they don't look that great. Mm. You know, a lot of the relationships didn't look that great. I talked with my mom about this episode. My mom's now 83, or actually she's 84. She just transitioned over Capricorn. Mm. Oh, you Capricorn people. Daniel's Capricorn too. And so she had said like, oh, you know, I spent my whole life like struggling with your father. And I laughed because my mom and I like to joke about such things now. Mm-hmm. It all seems funny in retrospect. But she was like, what the hell? I spent my whole life like struggling with this impossible man. And I was like, yeah, I know, mom. And we have funny conversations because I will say like, well, in your next life, rethink this. Do this a little different, you know? Not that I want you gone. Who knows how much you got? You could get another 10 years out of this body. You know what I mean? But like you're processing it out now. And yeah, we kind of laugh about it. My mom doesn't have spiritual beliefs almost at all. So for her, it's kind of just funny. But I'm like, no, remember this. Make your Shen remember this. But like it was interesting because it was sort of a movement to like the kind of view of the world that I was trying to share in our episodes, you know, last year, which were kind of important to me, which was I was moving to like what would be like I would consider to be my more mature version of how I think about things for myself, which would be, yeah, I think it's fine to love more than one person. I think there's something totally natural about that. And I felt like, okay, at least the way it was presented to me, obviously the Catholicism that I was growing up with didn't like that idea for sure.
Right.
Definitely against it. And I was like, I guess I'm in conflict with this. And so I don't think I believe in this anymore. And that was it. Now, I had mentioned in the previous time we recorded this that there is something interesting about that. Because when I got interested in the scholarship around the New Testament, there was a thing called the Jesus Seminar, which who knows what that could even sound like, what that would even mean. Seems like it might be something you do like at the hotel at the Hyatt up by the airport or something.
Right, that's exactly right.
And someone will charge you too much money to see if you can do the Jesus Seminar and then make a bunch of money in real estate or something.
That's right. That's how
in the process. But actually, it was a meeting of biblical scholars. So they had like the top biblical scholars, I think, in the world all get together. And per, you know, our episode, what did you call it? Like, not enough Jesuses or something? How did you call that episode?
Yeah, not again? Enough Jesuses.
Not Jesuses. Like, they were really trying to figure out, okay, since there's so many different versions of who this person is, can we all get together as scholars and figure out, is there any quotes or things that we can get from this person that we'll all vote that we agree is historically accurate?
Mm-hmm. You know?
And one of the ones that they agreed upon was Jesus saying that you shouldn't get divorced. And looking back on that, I was like, well, I thought divorce was fine, you know? So I thought my parents really should have done it. So I was fine with that, you know, though they never did. But I was like, yeah, you know, when you really look at it, if that's what they can say the historical Jesus might have likely said, a lot of us probably don't agree with that now, you know?
Right.
So in our own ways, maybe we're all have broken up in different ways, because obviously now divorce is something that we think is a totally legit thing to do. And if it's really bad between people, it's probably for the best, right?
Right.
But that wouldn't be true for the real Catholic people. I knew, like, my grandma would never do that. No matter how difficult my grandpa was, he was not an easy man. Though he had his charming qualities too. But, you know, she would never do that because it would be anti-Catholic.
Right.
So it's a weird little spot to, like, you know, if it was like, what is the game Jenga, where you build the tower of the blocks or something, right?
Yeah.
That's the Jenga piece that topples the whole tower is like kind of random, but that's how it was for me. Right. Mm. And it was part of this, you know, very particular window of my life. And it probably is, I've listened to people kind of tell their deconversion stories or whatever. And there's a number of really famous ones amongst the scholars of Christianity. It's not a typical one. It just happened because I was disagreeing with the lifestyle or something, you know, rather than not believing metaphysically that there could be a God, because I still thought there could be a God.
Right.
Or actually not having a bad feeling about Jesus, because I did have a good feeling about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least what I would ultimately find to be the Jesus that I believed in, you know, right, which we had talked about in previous episodes. It wasn't that, it was something else. And then I think it was weird for me then, because then a cascade of a whole bunch of other things seemed to hit me, because it was kind of a full load of kind of questioning and doubt that started to appear. Retrospectively, I kind of look at it as like my more true spiritual identity kind of evolving out,
Right.
and I was trying to do that over time. So it wasn't like just that cultural piece that fell apart for me, the part about relationships and love and my feeling like, no, I think it's okay. In your life, you might find that you love more than one person, and I don't think that's anything to feel bad about or ashamed of. And that kind of was a piece, but then it like other parts of things started to fall apart as well. And looking back, I kind of think about it with some of the Jung conversations we had as we've been doing these episodes that have been sort of related to Jung in different ways, where I think he went through those experiences too, where
Well, it's
different
also
pieces pulled things apart.
kind of like you can believe that like various other spiritual traditions, you can love them also. And at least it may be and I'm certainly not as well versed in the history of the Judeo-Christianic practice, but from what I do know, there is much to do about I am the only God. You know, this is the one, I am the one, there are no others. And that, again, if we're using the uniqueness and exclusivity
Oh,
principles,
that was the Esther Perel ideas that we had like in the
Master
episodes
Perel,
last year.
that like your unique view of relationships at that time then began to foster your unique view of spiritual practice at that time. Do you know what I'm saying?
It was okay to do Zen now or something, and I didn't have to feel bad about it or something, you know?
And I think, I mean, I'm wondering now as we're doing this for the second time. I mean, there's things always happen for a reason, but like it's actually a really deep kind of correlate the way that we can use that the relationship idea, and sort of superimpose it onto people's, spirituality, and that like you can have various loves in your life and not have an issue with it. We talked about this, at length in 23 on our on the podcast here, with relationships and whatnot, but even with like your own your siblings or your children or even ex-girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever you were dating, like, you don't feel bad because you love somebody and you're no longer with them. Hopefully you learn from them via your life experience, whatever. But why would that not be the same for one's own spiritual life too?
Yeah, I had that thought too. It's interesting you're bringing it up, because like I was using the same metaphor, because at some point I had to break up with Zen. I never really fully broke up with Zen, but I was doing this Zen training. I was thinking about this during the retreat. Our minds sometimes work in parallel. It's almost like we've been doing this podcast for a bit. But like I was thinking, yeah, at some point Zen was good for me. I learned a lot. But at some point, there was kind of like a martial arts quality to it, which was very valuable to me in the beginning. It helped build up sort of a core strength in my character, that was helpful, and like the ability to handle obstacles and develop a certain kind of will, all the good things that the martial arts can do, because the martial arts are have great qualities, right? But they wanted me to take on this role of like the retreat ass kicker who's yelling at everybody and like, and like enforcing the hard, tough laws in the retreat. And there's a role of that in the Zen tradition, the Jikki Jitsu, they call it. And I was like, no, I can't do this gig. This isn't right for me. This isn't going to fit my personality. And there was a lot of pressure to do it. And so I ended up breaking up with Zen. And it meant a lot to me. And I remember the first time I didn't go on retreat, I was a little heartbroken. But I was like, okay, this isn't right. I'm gonna have to move on and find something different. I think I was like writing some music or something to distract myself or something. I remember very specifically, like, people on a retreat and I'm not there. And I've been on every retreat for the last 3 years.
But you brought up a point about reminding your mom to remind herself in her next life not to be with, kind of like one difficult person, that you can be freer to do as you wish. But like, that was kind of a deep thought, like, okay, listening to ourselves, or following what we believe to be as true for our life path, that could very easily be our spirits, our souls, ourselves, some aspect of it talking to us, saying this ain't right for you for various reasons, because that's not part of this path. You already done that, you know?
Yeah.
Open it up a little bit and let it roll. So, you know, I'm not saying that those you necessarily have to have. You can have one partner your whole life and have a variety of spiritual leanings. That's, you know, they're not like related, but we're, you know, as we're kind of like coming to the sort of tail end of the relationship stuff, it does seem to fit. And especially in the episode that you know, we're kind of doing this case study on you in that particular time period, it does seem to fit. And I think it's important, even if you choose to be monogamous in your relationship or monogamous in your spiritual practice, that's fine. But it really should be it should be a conscious choice, not something that you do out of default.
And that's really what we talked about off mic with this stuff too. There should be freedom of choice to choose what works best for you and not feel like you're forced into something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I had like, I wanted to bring up the Jung quote again, and I don't have it in front of me, which is kind of stupid, but I'll paraphrase it. It was one of the ones that we talked about in the previous episode where he had said, to be normal is the ideal aim of unsuccessful people.
That's correct.
And I had seen it on a t-shirt where it said, to be normal is the ideal aim of mediocre people, which is a kind of a spicy quote. but it, by definition, it's kind of true. So I always thought that was kind of clever. But when I saw the longer quote, the point he's more making is that, and that's something we've talked about before, that just kind of people are in different spaces in their life, right?
Yeah.
And it's almost like there's a type one type person, and they're struggling just to find their way in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're wrestling with, you know, psychological problems. Maybe they're wrestling with, you know, severe financial difficulties. Maybe they come from a dangerous environment, you know, where they're trying to work their way out of something that was very difficult. Like it's that kind of a headspace, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what Jung goes on to say is it's for those kinds of folks, their goal is to become a societally successful person in the sense that they can be a type two person.
Right.
Get out of those difficulties and be in something that's more stable and more secure, right? So when I saw the longer quote, I'm like, oh, this is a much more compassionate quote. You know, he's basically saying that for mm-hmm. those people, even as clinicians, that's the proper goal for that person.
Right.
To get themselves into that headspace. But then he goes on to say that as you go through, if you're one of those type two people, a lot of times that can become what he calls like a Procrustean bed, which is on some old Greek myth where there was this son of Poseidon, and he's a horrible character who like would take people and imprison them in this bed that he had made. And then if the person was too long, he'd cut the body parts off and make them fit.
Right.
If they were too short, he'd put them and stretch their bones out and break them to make them fit. So he says, I think it's from his clinical practice, he said, for some people, if they're not really a type two person, that will start to be that for them. That'll feel forced. And then he says, you're going to have a lot of like unhappiness that will grow out of that. You know, you'll have a lot of anxiety, a lot of despair, a lot of misery. He says it pretty strong in the quote. You'll be drowning in a sea of hopelessness or something. Like, I don't know, that might be a strong language, but you know, it won't feel good.
Right.
It'll feel bad, you know? And I think on some level, I was becoming aware of that too. I saw like an interconnectivity thing was starting to clarify for me at this time, which I guess I associated back with like Judeo-Christian culture or something. For me, that kind of like coalesced around that idea where, okay, there are different types of people. And I kind of sensed that there's a type one fear that runs through the culture, you know, that we're all afraid of maybe dropping out the bottom,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's a real fear.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Because it's a harsh culture, right? As we talked in previous episodes, in a certain sense, it's Saturn's culture, you know, if you want to look at it that way, right? It's harsh. You can fall out the bottom, certainly in America. Maybe if you're in like Scandinavia, it's not going to be like that. You know, any of our listeners who are Finnish, you can clarify that for us.
for our Finnish section of the audience.
Because I think their stuff is easier. But, you know, like you get more social safety net, but there's nothing here in the United States, potentially. You might just fall straight through the bottom.
Yeah.
And people feel that and they're afraid. And I started to sense like, yeah, I somehow this all fits together culturally. There's a sort of a, maybe a more standard life that I was identifying with sort of a Judeo-Christian culture or something, but it was also like American culture and the way that coalesced together and this thing, okay, I want the security of like a type two life because I'm afraid with reasons to be afraid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of got, well, things are like tempting me here a little bit. Where Like for my father, he would have me go to work in corporate America. Like he said, that's what I should do.
Right.
Even though he was pretty miserable. And he explained he was miserable every day. He still thought it was the safest thing to do. And he had grown up without money. He had grown up in public housing. He was afraid. And I guess on some level, he was probably afraid for me too, you know.
Sure.
And he thought, you know, this is what you should do, which was a terrible idea for me. I'd rather just like I jump off the building. You know, I wouldn't be able to do it. You know, I had friends who did it, and I was like, how the fuck did they do this? You know? But of course, I realized for them that it isn't that big of a deal. It's right for them, you know, or at least it doesn't bother them in the same way it bothered me. But I was feeling that thing, and like I realized if I did that, it was because I would be afraid. And I
Right.
felt something about that in relationships too, that a lot of the relationship had a lot to do with like security and trying to establish some kind of security. When we were doing our big episodes in 2023, I talked with people about this, and underneath there was a lot of that conversation actually. That part of what was driving them in their choices of who they were with and why they were living what they were living and their life was fear, you know, and this fear of like the way Jung is talking about falling through the bottom or something like that, being genuinely afraid of that. And like, it's a fear I can empathize with. Like, I understand it's not unreal. But I was like, yeah, I think that's like, you know, what I was thinking at the time was, I think that's probably what's motivating a lot of this, you know, that there's a need for security and you find it through a certain kind of way of work and a certain kind of way of building a stable something for yourself so you don't feel as vulnerable and afraid. I had like multiple people I talked about where that when you got to the bottom, that's kind of what they were saying. You know, their lives were chaotic, their lives were unstable. And then like the stability of this type two thing was what they needed, you know, and that stabilized them. And those are some pretty powerful conversations I had with people. I was like, okay, I understand. I understand where you're coming from.
Related, but slightly not. I was listening to a comedian earlier, and he said that he likes to tell. Now, granted, this is a comedian saying this during his stand-up, so you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. But he tells all the women he dates that he was homeless a year ago. Because now when they come over and see his, you know, one bedroom studio apartment and his Toyota Corolla, they believe that he's doing be much better in life and he's on an upward trajectory, you know.
That's funny.
But it does highlight the point that like that's
He's
not a,
reached the bottom rung of the type two existence, so now he can like show it off.
right, yeah, but like that's not that's believable, you know, that like my teacher Andre will say, every joke is a half joke. And so he probably wasn't, this is a joke that he's telling, but like it's believable to people because you would say, oh, if you were homeless a year ago and now you have a studio apartment and a, you know, a 15-year-old Toyota Corolla, you're doing pretty good, you know? But like the fact that you could even wrap your mind around somebody making that transition is not impossible to fathom. You can
No,
go, oh
it's
yeah.
real. It's realistic. It could be something that could happen to somebody, right? I was thinking about like country music with this because my daughter and I were talking about one. I'm not a big country music person.
Yeah,
Shocker. But
nah.
there's one country song, Tennessee Whiskey, which I think is really good, you know? And it's by this guy, I guess Chris Stapleton. So if anyone knows country music, you might know the track. But I was thinking about, you know, that is like the trope of the country song too. You know, I was a drinker and I was, you know, all messed up, but then I met my sweetie and then she straightened me out and now I'm like a good Christian man. You know, that's a country music staple. And I, you know, we were, I think when she came back from France, we were kind of BSing around and we both liked this song, you know. It's a real simple song, but it like it's a great song, you know, for a country song. You know, and even if you're not a country music fan. And good cool guitar work too. Play guitar. So I was like, this is a good guitar play. Anyways, I was thinking about the lyrics of that and I was like, yeah, that's the type one, type two story, you know? And a lot of stories are like that. Once you develop an eye for it, you start to realize, oh, this is a type one, type two story. This is the story of the person who's down and out, they meet the right person. This relationships picks them up and stabilizes them into this type two thing. It's like it's kind of like a cultural trope, you know. And once someone points it out, you're like, okay, yeah, a lot of stories are like that, right? Where it's the type two lifestyle that stabilizes the person out. But I think at the time I was also getting that what Jung was saying, the Greek god bed thing, like that was becoming clear to me. And I was like, oh man, for me, this is going to feel like that uncomfortable bed. You know, but I also could feel the fear of it, you know. So if I go back retrospectively, which what we're doing, all of this is retrospectively, but thinking it back on it, I could also then I look back and I look at like really how dangerous it all was in a psycho-spiritual sense for me, which is one of the other major points I wanted to make in the case study. And people will find their own stuff in this. I mean, we listen to other people's lives and we come to our own conclusions. But for me, looking back, I was definitely like, there's a lot of things that probably needed to happen for
Sure.
me to become who I really am.
Right.
The version of myself now that I actually like, I like, and like, I'm happy that I got to the place where I am. With its ups and downs, of course, but I do feel like I got to some place where I feel good about it, and there was a real danger that all these events might not have unfolded if I hadn't maybe faced these things in the moment or something. A lot of things that maybe should have happened wouldn't have happened. You were talking about earlier about almost what reminded me of the Jungian sense of individuation, like recognizing things and getting ahead of them. Don't let the karma kick you in the ass. Jump out ahead of it. Start running ahead, and like that kind of thing, recognizing like, okay, Jung talks about individuation, getting ahead of the process. So the process is going to go anyways, in Jung's view, whether you're a willing participant or not, this train's going in this direction. You can either hop on the train or you can get hit in the front and the train will carry you along, but you're going to have to like, it's better to be on the train. And he makes an interesting point with that. So when I reflect back on it, I think, wow, that's really kind of terrifying for me to reflect back and realize, oh, that could have gone another way in this weird little window where so much was in flux. And there was like, it was one of those like little quantum stories or something, right? Like anything could happen, out of that particular sea of probabilities or something. And it's kind of like scary for me to look back on. And it's also kind of compassion generating too for me, because, we all go through these windows, right? They're not easy. But, in the end, I was supposed to become, from my point of view of myself, more of this like Zen Buddhist, Taoist, Sufi, Buddhist, tantric a person. That was the trajectory, right? That was where the train was heading. And it could have gotten blocked or confused, or the tracks could have gotten like messed up, and I could have been heading someplace completely different. Which, I mean, I look back on it and I'm like, wow, that's kind of scary retrospectively. Because specifically what was happening, and I'll explain a little bit more, was in this relationship I had with this person, she was like transitioning back and she was really pushing us to be like, okay, now it's time for us to settle down and have kids and do all these things.
Now that I'm good.
Yeah, she had decided that. And I was kind of like, I hadn't done as much of the open relationship stuff that we had been talking about. I was like more accepting of her because she needed those experiences, And so that was me trying to show her the love. Interestingly enough, just as a little sidebar on this, I was talking with my daughter about this because it came up with my son. My son is starting to realize, ooh, my dad thinks about things a little bit differently. He's starting to pick up on this. He's a perceptive person. And I was talking with my daughter, and she was like, oh yeah, he's picking up on all this stuff. And they watched this show together that's a British show called Sex Education. And so one of the phrases they use on the show is like, we're ethically non-monogamous. So sometimes I would listen to the two of them talking and they joke about that phrase. I'm ethically non-monogamous. I'm ethically non-monogamous is like a little buzz phrase in the show. And so my son was kind of alluding to this stuff a little bit. And I was like, interesting. Because I'd never said anything exactly to him about it, but he's picking up on the vibes. I think because whenever there's a rom-com we're watching or something and someone acts jealous, I always like pause the video and go, that's a mistake. Don't be a jealous person. Don't be a possessive person. They're showing you this like it's a good emotion. It's a Buddhist klesha. Now we can watch to see what happens to, Ryan Reynolds in this next scene.
Watch what
Yeah,
attachment does to you.
this is going to mess your shit up. And my daughter was like, oh, yeah, he's having some sense around this. So he was bringing this question up. He was asking me about this kind of stuff. And I told him the story that I had told in our episode in 2023, where, this woman I love came to me and said, hey, I think I need to have the freedom to explore more with other people. It's not like I don't love you. And I said, okay. And I kind of talked about George Harrison doing that with Eric Clapton and all that. So I told this story to my son. And his reaction was really interesting because when I got to the point of like, George Harrison did this thing for his wife and his friend, and he was just like, yeah, that's the right thing to do. Like it was perfectly obvious to him, Yeah, what else would you do? And I was like, interesting, So I don't know if that's a Gen Z thing or a Hin thing or whatever that is, but
You've been dropping subtle hints for a while now, Eric. So
maybe not that subtle, but
no,
no,
right.
He just looked like, well, obviously, you know, like what else, if you say you love someone else, what else would you do? And I was
Right,
like,
yeah.
okay. From the mouths of babes. So anyways, I look back at that and that was, it was a, there was a, in a very real kind of American sense, it could have been like, you know, we had a deep attachment between us. I had a lot of feelings for her and vice versa. And we could have like gone to that place. I could really easily imagine that happening.
Yeah.
A lot of influence. You know, when you really, you love someone so much, they affect you so much, you kind of can get carried along with them a little
Sure.
bit. And so what was interesting in this little time period for me was I was questioning, okay, who am I? What do I really think about all this stuff? And there was this kind of thing happening between she and I where it was like, well, this could really go to this much more type two place, you know, using our terminology of the show, where it would have been, you know, a marriage and kids and all these things. And it would have been so bad. It would have been so wrong for me.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you
but
don't
it was
totally
like,
know that, but.
Retrospectively, I know it for sure.
Sure.
Like that would have been really wrong, you know, and not that it can't be right for other people, but for me,
right.
Wrong. You know, like very BAD capital letters, bad. But it was like something that was kind of sitting there as a thing to do. And I realized, wow, that's kind of scary to think back at that then in retrospect, you know. But I also could see it was driven around a lot by the kinds of things we were talking about, these sort of fears and insecurities and these kinds of things, right?
It would be interesting to see a documentary of an alternate reality where you did that, you know?
Yeah.
And but I feel like you'd be a completely different person.
Yeah. But I mean, that's kind of an interesting question because like, would like the natural currents of my particular personality still want to be pushing out?
Right. Yeah.
And my theory is, yeah. And so there would have been a lot of strife between us, you know? And I start thinking like, God, if there would have been kids involved, yikes, you know?
Right.
So that was a part of the thing I guess the point I'm trying to make is I recognized that problem.
Right.
I sat there and I said, wow, this is a real problem. I have a lot of attachment to this person. I love her very much. She has a very strong influence on me. And you know, sometimes when it's like that, you can get pulled along.
For sure.
And another person's momentum. And I was like, this isn't right. I recognized that thing. And I looked back and I said, oh, that was smart. Like the reason in the end that that thing really ended from my point of view, from my side was, oh yeah, she's going to pull me into this place. And she's never going to let me do this Zen thing. There's just no fucking way in hell she's going to let me do that. I was graduating from my undergrad thing soon.
Right.
And it was getting pretty obvious that I was going to go and study Zen for multiple years. And I wasn't going to go to grad school and I was going to do something different.
Right.
And that there was no way in hell she was going to let that happen. So, I mean, for me, I guess the moral of that, as we look at it as a case study, was like really thinking deeply about who you're with. Right. Really thinking deeply about it.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's like, okay, what's your trajectory? What's this person's trajectory? Are you heading to the same place?
Right. And that's a thing
you
for
know?
I mean, you're very adamant about, you know, your relationships and how they deeply, deeply affect your life and your being. So to be very conscious about who you choose to spend your time with.
But what do you think about that? I mean, my basic, and we'll see how we evaluate this for both of us, but I feel like in watching people, the way people are affected by their significant others is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, just as a clinical observation, you know, outside
yeah.
of my own personal feelings about this, I mean, it's a big deal. And you'll
yes.
probably end up growing more and more like this person. You're going to go and end up more like they'll go and meet you in ways. I'm not saying it's always one-sided, but you're going to end up really being strongly affected and probably ending up more and more like this person.
Yeah. I think.
You know?
You know, I think we'll probably agree that there is one person who is maybe a little bit more personality dominant in the relationship. And they're a little bit of the driver, maybe the more outgoing one or the whatever. They're the kind of the driver in terms of life doings and things like this, you know, and maybe even spiritually, maybe even philosophically, whatever, if they care about that more, the other person might not care that much about it. So they'll let the other one lead in that way. And so I do feel to your point that like someone is going to influence the other one probably a bit more. I think more Well, I can't say. I think it's even it could be men or women. It doesn't really matter. I think maybe for traditionally it's the men a little bit more, but I think totally it could be 50-50, you know? And so I think the choice of partner, and not just the choice of partner from a physical or energetic standpoint, but when when you're a little bit older and you can choose consciously, especially in a monogamous relationship, but any relationship really, is to look at the trajectory of how they're viewing the expression of their life as sort of a creative endeavor, if you will, and where that fits with your view of it. And if those two views align, then the synergy could be even greater than they could be individually, actually, you know, because you'll learn from each other in ways that you're both bringing in constantly new or deeper information from your own independent studies.
Well, I think that's the tantra thing, right?
Yeah.
That two people who can orientate together can create a lot of energy together, right?
Yes.
And all kinds of relationships, not just the romantic ones.
Yeah,
Like
yeah, yeah, yeah.
you and I, we talked about before, like we have a partnership, right? And what we're doing, and we build, like, and we help each other grow and develop. It can be all kinds of relationships like that. But I really believe that that's true,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah,
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 that's
yeah.
the Rumi, Shams of Tabriz thing too. But it is funny that you bring it up, because I think in the beginning of our connection with one another, I thought it was more me. But at a certain point, I realized, oh no, this is, we're in conflict with each other here, you know? And like in some ways, I was like, okay, I'm being influenced by this person, which is fine. I don't mind being influenced. But then by this point, I really had a, it was a very, it was another one of those moments. I had a very clear thought, like, I'm going to go do this Zen. It's important to me. Another point I wanted to bring up in the little case study, it's important for me to do this now. If
Sure,
I
yeah.
don't do this now, then I probably am not going to do it. Or the decisions I make going forward will not be informed by who I really am. It's important that I know who I am now, because then the rest of the decisions I make will be a reflection of that.
Right.
But if I just get driven forward to making a bunch of decisions, they won't reflect who I am, and this thing is going to go off course.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel like a lot of times when I've been adamantly no about things or adamantly yes about things, it's not an accurate representation of my authentic feeling, you know?
That's interesting.
And I'm just unwilling to comply because it's not me.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, if it's not me, I mean, I could definitely, and it was more like I kind of recognized, like, she's not gonna let me do this. There's no way. I'm gonna get so much resistance. It's gonna be such a pressure point of conflict between us that she's just not gonna accept me in
Right,
this. Yeah.
right.
But I also felt like, again, the kind of things around, okay, there's a security thing here. It's a type two question. And, you know, traditional relationships are a lot about security. We can be honest
For
about it,
sure,
you know?
for sure.
And it really hit me as I was thinking about this episode. You know, I knew we were recording it coming out of the retreat. And these are economic relationships. They almost always are. I'm not saying they aren't love relationships too,
Right.
but they're economic relationships, because you spend all this time building this thing with this person, and your whole life hinges upon what happens with them in a very real way, right? You're economically entwined with them. You're practically entwined with them. That's just the truth. It hit me pretty deeply, even reflecting back on this. And I think I was realizing this around that time. So I guess the other thing I would say in terms of the type one, type two, I had this with this thing where I realized, okay, so this is how it is. You know, there's like a type two thing, the way Jung is talking about, and maybe that's okay for you. Maybe that suits you, right? There's a type one thing where you feel like afraid you're falling out the bottom. And then there's like a type three thing where you're trying to like explode out the top, you might say, or something, right? It feels wrong to like hierarchy these
Yeah, it's
things.
a
It doesn't seem
hierarchy then.
entirely right, but
Yeah.
it's written into the thing, and he thinks that way on some level. So it
Yeah.
probably reflects his views. But in any case, if you do feel like you're stuck, there's a way of like popping out, right? Let's say it like that. You know, if for you that feels stuck, you know, to be in that type two space. And so on the one hand, I realized, I have all these fears around this. I was afraid of that. I was pretty conscious, like, okay, I'm a little afraid here of like falling out the bottom. But I'll ask people to think about this, you know, each in their own way. But one of the other things about this in this little case study thing is like, okay, I realized like I'm gonna have to challenge this fear in myself.
Right.
And so I made a kind of a conscious decision to say, okay, I'm gonna let myself fall out the bottom a little bit. And I'm going to go through, and I'm not going to go to grad school, even though everyone kind of expects me to do it, you know, not doing that. I'm going to go study this Zen stuff. I'm going to eke out a meager living, which was pretty meager. I was living in what you would call a garden apartment in the Chicago parlance, which means a basement. It's not like you get to see the garden. You live under the garden.
You're under the garden.
Yeah, you can like see the tops of the grass. And that was by Wrigley Field, where the Cubs play, the Chicago Cubs baseball team. And the drunken people would go walking past my window and look into my little garden apartment. And I would say hello as I'd be doing my Zen. And like, it was one of the most important windows of my entire life, you know, because it was more the thing you were talking about earlier, is when I kind of like took more of the reins on this. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to get trampled by these horses. I'm going to try to hop on a horse. You know, in the Jungian thing, whatever set of images you like, and I'm going to try to like I'm going to ride this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Country music, Chris Stapleton. So, yeah, and so it was really important to do that, and it was like, I guess it was pretty conscious too. It was what was interesting. It was very conscious decisions. It was like, this woman is not going to let me go through this Zen. Can't do it. I got to go this way, even though I love her. She's not going to let me do this thing. I have difficulties with this Christianity, how they're framing how life should be lived. I guess I don't agree with it. You know, I don't know who I am yet, but I don't agree with this, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And then it was also like, I'm afraid of like the risk that I felt in this. Retrospectively, I think I wasn't like falling through the bottom. I was trying to do the type three thing. I was trying to like hop out in the other direction, though I didn't see it that way at the time, but that's what I was trying to do,
right.
you know? And so, I mean, those are, I guess for me, are some of the important morals mm-hmm. of this mm-hmm. As we get to kind of the end of this, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, the only last thing I would say about it was it made me reframe Sangha. Now that I look back on it, it was like, yeah, you got to find your Sangha.
And just to give a little frame of reference for those who are unfamiliar with that term.
Well, we let some other things. We let uniqueness and exclusiveness slip by with defining it.
We did.
Uniqueness is people who sort of look at relationships more like, I can have feelings for multiple people because each one is more unique and my feelings for them are special. Exclusiveness are people who just want the one person. It's a little late in the game for that one.
It is a little late. We do have an episode called the exclusivity principle, which is an episode just dedicated to those two terms, basically.
Yeah, it's a cool Esther Perel bit of phraseology. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Sangha thing is like your spiritual community.
Yeah, there you go.
But what really hit me was, for our culture, your relationships, your significant other or significant other, that's your Sangha.
Yes.
For me, we talked about this, you know, like maybe we talked about it in the episode that didn't stick, but like my kids are my Sangha.
Sure.
I didn't expect that, but they are, you know, I talk with my daughter about a lot of deep stuff, you know, and my son too, even though he's younger, you know, what's age appropriate, but, you know, there's the Sangha, you know? And so I think maybe that's a different way for us to think about Sangha, but then, you know, in the Zen, in the Tantra thing, I should say, there's the whole thing about, be careful how you choose your Sangha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Choose the Sangha that suits your Tantric personality. If you're not choosing the Sangha that suits your Tantric personality, it's hard to be a Tantrica, you know, you're going to get pushed off. So I think I was, this stuff was all clicking, you know? So that's, I guess, my case study for the most part. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's been all entirely easy because, you know, when we did the uniqueness, I was writing a listener and friend today about this, but, you know, we kind of framed it as like maybe orientations. There's a uniqueness orientation. Mm-hmm. There's an exclusiveness orientation. Maybe you could also think of it like a continuum or something, right? Where people exist on like some place along this continuum where they feel comfortable, right? And maybe for me, I'm more like way towards the uniqueness side or something like that. But, you know, being that way, it's a very exclusivist culture. You know, you see it when you're not that. And so that hasn't always been easy, you know. But for the capper of this little part of this, for me, I would say, I think I still feel like it was the most important thing to do because it's better to be who you are.
Yes.
You know, it's better to be who you are and to feel comfortable in your own skin, even if it gives you some conflicts. It still feels better.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess that's the bulk of the case study. I have like one other thing I like to throw out for your interest in the future episode, but that certainly I'll keep, but that seems like a natural stopping point, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Did you want to do your own episode on this, Daniel? How do you feel about this? Do you have a story you want to tell? You, I
Well,
don't
we'll talk about it off mic, you know.
know if... The other thing I had the idea of, just to like slightly preview it, is there's a Taoist idea called the nine obstructions.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And I think I was starting to realize the nine obstructions,
Okay.
you
Yeah,
know, the
let's
kind
do
of things
that
that
next time.
can go wrong. So maybe we'll do the nine obstructions as the follow-up to this or
Yeah,
something.
I think
Yeah.
it's.
Okay. That's cool. All
All right.
right. Thanks so much, Daniel, for
No.
sharing this one with me. You know,
Of course,
it's
yeah,
always
no.
interesting when we get the chance to share these ways.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no. Thanks for sharing. And I think, you know, doing we don't always do case studies like this. I mean, we kind of do bits by, I mean, every episode is a little bit of pieces, you know, from our lives, our experience, so on and so forth, you know. From the clinic to, you know, with dealing with patients and students in your case sometimes. I think it's just important for people sometimes to do the stock taking of their own experience and learn, like sit down and learn from it. Just, you know, I think most people have some kind of reflection in their life, you know, depending on their level of time that they give themselves to do that. But it's different when you sit with either somebody else or you sit with you know, a pen and paper or voice recorder or something like that, and like just lay it all out for yourself. Give your tale. Give the narrative to something or someone or even you, and to see what is that you can either relearn, remember, and then apply moving forward again, so that you're not repeating the same mistakes. And you can see there might be something else that was happening throughout your story that may give you an insight into yourself or into what might be coming in the future. I just think that's a powerful thing. And so, you know, just on top of the particulars that you learned as you were going through it, this is really an important reminder for those that like your life is your story, and that story is unfolding, and what has happened will influence what will also happen, you know. And so as we kind of talk about like this authentic style of living, like you said, you wanted to choose from the place that you wanted to choose from based on these very particular experiences. You wanted that to influence your decisions and your life. And so you had a moment of conscious choosing of like, no, I want to choose the next aspect of my life after I do this particular thing.
Yeah, and like it's interesting because it was the Jung thing of like getting ahead and going, okay, I'm gonna consciously do this, right? I'm recognizing like I want the rest of my life to reflect the insights that I'm getting now, but I better do this now because then this window will close and I'll be pulled off into something else, you know? And then the other part that was really striking looking back, and I know I said it earlier, but maybe it's part of the capper of it, would be like you don't know where this is gonna go. And so if I hadn't let the opportunities go where they were going to go, I could never have predicted that it would go to this place. There's no fucking way in hell I would have thought that it would end up here, you know? And you know, your mind is a funny thing because it's trying to calculate like, where's this going to go? Where's this going to go? You don't know, actually, right?
And that's the point of doing it.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? You really don't know. And then you're like, okay, wow, like it had to go to this place. This is actually the logical unfolding of this, but I never would have anticipated that in advance, right? And so I never could have like tried to plot this course. It like it really was I had to like let these things unfold. Interesting.
Got to do it.
Very, very strange. Because if I wouldn't have done that, these other things wouldn't have happened. If I would have like tried to be schemey, you know, try to say, okay, these are the right things to do, these other things wouldn't have ever had the opportunity to grow. It's interesting. Yeah.
We don't have any product placement, but the advertising slogan for one company, just do it, is very good,
Yeah,
you know?
it's interesting. Okay, so thanks so much, Daniel.
Yeah,
Yeah,
of course. Eric, thanks for
I appreciate stuff
sharing.
with these things. Yeah.
And for our audience, thanks for listening. We do appreciate all the love and the feedback. If you want to, you know, leave a comment in the YouTube, you know, please go ahead and do so. We get some comments once in a while. It's nice to see people interacting with us. So feel free to do that. Same thing on Instagram, Jin and Tantra podcast on Instagram. If you're listening to us on Apple, you know, leave us a review. It helps the show grow. But anything else, you know, you guys can do, you know, leave us an email if you like at jinandtantra@gmail.com, and share our work with people. This, you know, this is a, you know, we always say this is a passion project we have here. So, you know, the more people hear it, the more, you know, it feeds us a little bit. We get a little bit of juice from the love that we get from people. So, you know, feel free to hit us up. Let us know how, you know, some of the things that we have been sharing, been discussing over the last few years have sparked even conversations within, within yourself or within your community. And if you don't have anybody to talk about it with, then, feel free to come talk to Uncle Daniel and Uncle Eric. We'll be happy to continue the conversation because this is our experience. This is our life. This is what we feel to be, an important facet of our, authentic or our creative living. And having these conscious conversations gives a flashlight to some of the darker parts of our life, not darker in terms of experience, but like things that we don't always think about, because we all have so much stuff going on with our schedules and our patients, and everybody has families and obligations and whatever, but taking some time to do what we're talking about, reflection, this is our way of making it a staple in our being, not just the moments where we take, 10 minutes or whatever to look back at it, but making it an active conversation and igniting that with other people. It's really a gift in my life. And I know, Eric, you feel the same.
Well, I mean, we really believe that this is a spiritual process. Like, we really believe in it.
Yeah.
Like, this is like one of the best things you can do for yourself. Like, we genuinely believe in it. So,
mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So thanks for letting us share. Yeah.
Thanks for letting us share. Exactly. Well, my friend, thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you, Daniel.
Everybody else. For Eric, this is Daniel. We'll catch you guys in the next one. Peace. I want you to get together. I want you to get together. Put your hands together one time. I want you to get together. I want you to get together.